welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay. I am your host, Mike Jokum. Matt is stuck with me for another Formula One episode. I guess we'll start by looking at this past weekend at Circuit of the Americas, talk a little bit of news afterwards if there's anything, and then no racing this weekend, so we get a weekend off. But Matt, before we even get to the top five, if you were to describe the U.S. Grand Prix in three words or less this year, how would you describe it?
It was electric. I don't know if we need to start doing a dance now. But this is a horrible dad joke.
I was going to ignore it.
Well, you have to keep me honest and call me out on those. Yeah, I think the race itself was okay. It had definitely had captivation with the strategies and will he, won't he catch him, things like that. But the weekend was awesome just to see the huge amount of fans there, to see such an engagement for COTA, which is a track that we thought was going to go bust last year, to now, all signs point it to being a marquee American event for years to come. I mean, it's on the grid next year pending the contract approval, and I'd say this last weekend it's a good indication that hopefully that gets straightened out, because it's pretty apparent, you know, fans are definitely interested into it, and I don't know if we're going to talk about this later, but those ticket prices for Miami look pretty steep. So if I'm choosing between Austin, Texas, which is a city on the rise in Texas, which, you know, has its ups and downs and other cool parts of Austin, I think, you know, if I'm choosing that or Miami, which I'm not the biggest warm weather guy. I mean, Austin's not exactly cold, but Miami's a different animal sometimes. I'm probably going to go with Austin. If that's me.
Yeah, you know, before today, I would have said, listen, I love Austin. I've been there a bunch, but I don't know. Miami seems pretty cool. I've only been there once, and I was really just working for a couple days. But we'll save that for later. My answer would be, I don't think I could fit this in three words either, but great crowd, meh race. I think the championship battle, the 1-2 of the undercut by Verstappen a couple times, very exciting. Obviously didn't really play out with a battle at the end there, although it was obviously very close. But the rest of the race was kind of just average at best. But nonetheless, Verstappen won. He now leads by 12. Lewis Hamilton second. Perez third. Leclerc fourth. Daniel Ricciardo fifth. And the only thing I can think of from this race that is worth, I mean, there's not a lot to discuss other than, okay, there's two things I have. First, do you think that Verstappen's aggressive jolt to the left on the start was the right move after Hamilton got an electric start? Or do you think he could have maybe slid in and you know, focused on the remainder of the corners there in that first section and had a better jump?
He has got every right to defend that spot and however he sees fit, as long as he doesn't, you know, shove him off the track or make contact or anything like that. So to me, he had every right to push for it. It's a, you know, a pivotal moment in the race, and as it turned out to be a pretty pivotal moment, because, you know, Lewis led the first 13 laps.
Yeah.
Pitted. Max got the overcut on it or undercut on him. But you know, that forces Red Bull's hand into trying a new strategy, which, you know, played out later in the race too. So getting the lead on lap one is of paramount importance. So for me, Verstappen needs to defend like hell to try to keep it. And I have no issue with anything he did there.
No, I don't have an issue. I feel like there was something better he could have done than going far left and taking himself kind of out of the apex of the turn, but it doesn't really matter because he won the race in the end, so there's really no point in debating it. Point number two, Nikita Mazepin had a complete, I mean, probably the worst race of this, the worst individual performance of the season. Now, in lap one, he had to pit because his headrest was coming out and he couldn't see his mirrors. Like, okay, fine, I understand that. He said the race was boring and painful, but what really gets me, I actually have trouble getting through this point because it's so maddening, is he said it's human error. So he's blaming his team that his headrest comes off. Like, okay, maybe it wasn't secured incorrectly, but to throw your team under the bus, if I was a crew guy on that team, especially the one with the headrest, I put like Icy Hot on his headrest the next race or the next time he's in the car or something like that. Just a little FU, because I just think it's completely unacceptable to blame your team for something like that.
Devil's advocate, is he wrong?
Well, you know, our pal Gunther Steiner said the problem was the locking pins did not engage when the headrest was pushed back during pre-race grid preparations. So, listen, could it be partly human error? Maybe, but I don't think talking about that publicly is you're already in enough shit this year. Why don't you just go talk to the team privately and go, guys, what happened? Like, it's just unnecessary.
I don't know. I actually might disagree with you on that one.
I mean, that's fair. You're allowed to disagree. I mean, your point is wrong.
It's weird.
But...
yeah, it's a weird feeling. I mean, to me, I think both can be warranted depending on the situation. Now, for something as trivial as this, maybe not. But to me, sometimes in order for your message to get across maybe a little more clearly, especially with, and I'm not a Mazepin defender by any means, but, you know, if the reports are true that he does have, like, the second-rate chassis and...
I thought that got resolved at some point in the middle of the year.
Right, but it's just, like a culmination of those things. Like, if he's getting, like, second-rate treatment despite bankrolling the whole operation and this, that, the next thing, and then you start the race and your headrest comes off because it wasn't screwed incorrectly or is a faulty part. And I'm assuming that part probably cost $5 on a multi-million dollar machine. For that to cost you 30 seconds, to me, is kind of bullshit. So I think that it's warranted in certain situations to do both, to talk about it privately, but also maybe throw a quote in there so that it really tries to get the attention of everybody and know that you're not here to just ride around. But
splitting the middle between my original point and your point, maybe we could have just said it in a slightly more respectful way. Like, listen, I know the guys are trying hard, but, you know, things.
Nah.
No. Okay.
Don't sugarcoat it.
Okay.
Boo.
Okay. Fair. All right. Do we have anything else?
I'd be terrible at all that. See these guys and like, yeah, and that's like another point. It's just like, can we go on another rant about the media? Is these like self-serving answers that they expect from when they ask a driver a question? Like, I'm sure when Mazepin was asked,
right,
they probably were gonna get the ESPN answer of, "Oh, guys try hard." Kind of like what you said, guys are trying hard and things happen, blah blah blah, and then everybody gets to pat themselves in the back for what a great answer that is. And same with like football and
any sport,
basketball, any sport. You know, I think UFC is like the one exception, which I think is hilarious.
I know nothing about
that. You ask a fighter in a press conference, in a UFC press conference, what they think about something, they're gonna tell you what they think, even if you don't want to hear it. So I would love to see like a more toned down version of that. You know, we don't need to be cussing every 3 seconds in a press conference, but I think, to me, I would love to see more of those kinds of things, not to like a childish degree, but I respect when drivers are at least honest and say like, yeah, team messed up. Yeah, this person messed up. Yeah, that guy just wrecked me off the track and it was really unprofessional, things like that.
All right. Respect. Otherwise, I don't think we have really anything.
Oh, we're missing one.
Okay, go ahead.
So where do you fall on celebrities being allowed on the grid before a race?
Oh, Christ. The only reason I didn't mention that is because I'm so tired from the...
It's been like 24 hours.
Exactly.
Of just that.
Yes, exactly. I have no problem with it. I don't care if they know everything about racing or nothing about racing. If it brings new eyes to the sport, great. If it brings people even just an appreciation for the sport, and maybe they tune in once in a while, awesome. I don't even care if the celebrity doesn't stay a big fan of racing afterwards. Maybe some of their fans will. So I think, I'm sorry, what was her name again? Megan the Stallion?
Megan the Stallion?
Yeah, yeah. So I think she was actually kind of nice, and her one, the blonde-haired bodyguard got a little bit rude, and
Draco Malfoy
got a little rude, and I don't really I mean, listen, they should have probably been better prepped on what to expect on a motorsports grid if they weren't, but that's really the only issue. Otherwise, I don't care. I don't care if insert random celebrity wants to, if they pay for an appearance or they make an appearance, whatever. It's cool with me. I love, a couple years ago, God, who was it? Was that Barber? Channing Tatum was at Barber, and I got like multiple text messages from many lady friends and my mother, like, can you give Channing Tatum a hug for me? I was like, no, that's kind of uncomfortable, but like that stuff is really cool to me.
You get an opportunity to hug Channing Tatum, you take it.
I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying, like, at the time, like, I was trying to be professional. Weird, I know, but
yeah, don't like that. Hug him next time.
Okay.
You get one shot at this.
Channing, if you're listening, I would like a hug.
Channing, if you're listening, please sponsor us.
Also.
No, you're not listening.
Also that. All right.
Yes.
Yeah, do you have anything to add to that?
Oh, of course.
Go on.
So, first of all, I didn't think we'd be in this position in 2021 where we'd be going to bat for Megan Thee Stallion.
Yeah, I've never even listened to her music. I know who she is, but I don't listen to it.
Well, I guarantee you've probably heard her songs.
I know I have. I know, like I said, I've heard them, and I know who she is. I don't seek it out.
There are lyrics I could say.
No.
I'd like to remain on the internet.
Yeah, don't go there. Please don't go there.
So I just want to say that by all accounts of eyewitness accounts and what we saw just with the black and white footage, that it wasn't necessarily her who was like, shoo, go away. I think we can all kind of agree that it was, you said bodyguard, I'm pretty sure Draco Malfoy was not a bodyguard, probably a PR or publicist of some kind. If that dude's my bodyguard, I don't know. I think I might be in trouble. I think the first guy that was walking past was the bodyguard because he looked like he could handle Shaq. So I think it was not her fault that was awkward, that whole encounter. The second part is, I think, like, hope I'm saying her name right, Devin Altieri,
yeah,
and a couple other people who we really like came to bat on social media and said that, you know, it is important and also kind of like marketing 101 to have influencers and celebrities and whatnot come to the race because that increases exposure, that increases views, clicks, everything. And the common theme was gatekeeping should not be a thing in racing.
Correct.
I think we can all agree that that's probably right. I don't think we should be shooing people away because they don't know who the Sky Sports and multiple Formula One starter Martin Brundle is. Like, that's, to me, ridiculous that someone should need to, like, obviously, it might be a good pointer to be like, hey, heads up, if you see this guy walking around and sticks a mic in your face, just say hi. Also, I don't think Brundle should be getting more grief for his question. Like, do you think she really had a rap on cue?
It was a little bit of an odd question, yes.
I know she's talented, but like, if I was a rapper at a race, I would be there to enjoy the race and not thinking about, ooh, what can I rhyme?
That being said, listen,
Lewis Hamilton was.
He's a somewhat older British guy. He probably didn't know what to ask.
Fair. I mean, to be honest, when he stuck a mic, I don't remember. I think he said her name in like the second sentence, but like, I had no idea who that was. I'm not cultured enough, unfortunately, to like just spot the random musical artist and like know who they are, especially when I don't listen to too many of their songs. So I had no idea who that was until he said something. And she was also there for like Cash App.
Yeah.
I think. And Cash App's big on Red Bull, I think.
Yes.
If I remember correctly. So like, she was also like, yeah, she's obviously a huge celebrity, a big following, but she also was there promoing Cash App. So like, she was kind of there twofold. So.
Hey there, and welcome to the Joy of Paddle podcast, hosted by me, Minter Dial, a veteran of the paddle tennis world, and sponsored by Paddle 1969. Whether you're a paddle tennis aficionado, just beginning, or have never even heard of paddle or Padel, as it's called in North America. This is an exhilarating new show that delves into the captivating stories of notable paddle personalities worldwide. In its inaugural season, you'll be treated to exclusive anecdotes, valuable tips, life lessons, and humorous moments shared by esteemed professional paddle players, industry insiders, and passionate paddle enthusiasts. With each season aligning with the Pro Tour, you can anticipate 2 engaging episodes per month. The Joy of Paddle podcast is part of the Evergreen Podcast Network, where you can find other great shows in a number of categories, such as sports, health and wellness, true crime, and fiction. To find out more about Evergreen Podcasts, go to www.evergreenpodcast.com. Vamos!
Coming up on 5 Minute News, I'm Anthony Davis. You might think it's partisan because maybe it's critical of one side or the other, but it's not. It's just the truth. And I think that's also something that's kind of unusual for Americans listening to the radio or to podcasts, because the news landscape in the States has been so partisan for so many decades. So 5 Minute News is verified, truthful, independent, unbiased, and essential world news daily.
I think it was a fun 24 hours on social media, but hopefully this one, I think enough people agreed to the point where I kind of had a little bit of faith restored in humanity.
I was super bummed. So I got home Sunday and I was just laying on the couch watching a little football, and Shannon texted me and said, "Oh my God, did you just see the F1 pre-race?" Because I never watched the F1 pre-race, and I missed it by like 20 seconds live. So I had to wait for Twitter to do its thing. But yeah, I hope that's the last time we discuss that. What did you think, now that it's coming up on my screen here, Alonso versus Raikkonen and the awesomeness of the FIA and Alpine radio call afterwards?
I don't know if I could do this Formula One thing. I don't know if I could be one of the team principals or whatever. It's just too catty. You could obviously see what Alpine was getting at, but they're being so petty about it on the radio message. And I'm glad this FIA channel is there for everybody to see now, because that level of pettiness is not going to be well received, in my opinion. So, because you could clearly see what they're saying, like, "Oh, blah, blah, blah. Didn't they just do it? Or what can and can't they do?" And it's like, shut up. So it's just hard racing. Don't need to. I think without the FIA message, it would have been a back page story, but I think that made it a little more juicy.
Yeah, I didn't really see an issue with how Raikkonen came back on the track, because he was hard racing. The Alonso one, to be honest with you, I don't even remember, but we'll just leave it at that. All right, Matt, your driver of the day.
I will go with Leclerc.
Okay.
P4, qualified well, had a pretty good weekend, all things considered, and was beat the McLarens. So I think that's a step in the right direction for Ferrari.
Yeah, I think this is the first time we've ever taken somebody who was a lap down, but I'm going to go with Sebastian Vettel. Started 18th, I think, finished 10th, had a nice little battle there with Giovinazzi towards the end, and you know, got that car home and got a point, which is, you know, considering I predicted he would have a bad weekend, pretty impressive. So, and that's the first point Aston Martin's gotten in a handful of weeks at least. So good for him, especially when Lance was 12th, but never really felt like he was challenging in the points most of the day. So disappointment.
Probably Lando. By his own account, Lando said he needs to hold himself accountable for the mistakes he made. I didn't see in the broadcast / social media what mistakes he may be referencing, but if he's just talking about like missing a corner here and there or going too wide or just not having enough pace. But you know, he's supposed to be masterclassing Ricardo this season. Has for, I'd say majority of the times he's been the better driver, but Ricardo looked really good on Sunday. So, we'll hopefully see a turnaround in Mexico.
Yeah. Let me see here. I'm going to go with Williams as a whole for a team that you said was more midfield than not kind of was quiet all weekend and just wasn't on it. I think one of them changed an engine this weekend. I could be wrong.
I think George started last.
Yeah, he did. So, I mean, I know he moved up like six or seven spots on the first lap, but kind of stalled out there and just they had an unimpressive weekend. All right, I'll turn it to you.
I will say,
oh yeah, go ahead.
Well, I will say 14th and 15th is the midfield.
Hey, yeah, technical. All right, whatever. Just go on with our predictions.
I had for good. I had Norris P8, not very good. You had Ricciardo P5.
Better.
We'll count that. Bad. I had Ricciardo 5th, not very good. You had Vettel 10th, not very good at all.
Nope.
Top 10. Wait, really? I had Ocon 19th. Yikes. You had Tsunoda P9.
All right. Not my worst prediction weekend ever. That's pretty good.
I feel like you pick Tsunoda in one of the three categories every week, and it's usually bad.
Bad or dark horse top 10. Yeah.
Yeah. I only had one thing to talk about.
Yeah.
Other than, well, did you want to rant about ticket prices real quick for the Miami Grand Prix?
Yeah. Yeah. So let me.
Because I saw that you had shared that today.
Yeah. I found it from somebody sharing out I think it was pre-sale information. So ticket prices range anywhere from a minimum for, I guess, I don't know if this is literally sitting on the beach or some beach terrace is $640 to $880 at the low end, all the way up to turn 18, which is $1,200 to $1,550 per ticket. Yikes. I mean, that's you're pricing out. I mean, if you want your audience to be solely the richest of rich in Miami, yeah, you're probably doing a good job, but you're not going to get near the attendance that Circuit of the Americas got. So I don't know. That's a tough. I mean, I saw people today after seeing that were canceling hotel pre-orders and Airbnb pre-orders and what, I don't know if pre-order is the right word there, but you know what I mean? Reservations, I guess. So yeah, I understand it's almost like the situation with IndyCar in Nashville where maybe we need to understand more of what their target market is first, but for F1, which is trying to, you know, gain more of a foothold here in the US and obviously did a very good job of that this past weekend, pricing yourself in the give or take $100 minimum of $1,000 a ticket, you're eliminating probably a good chunk of the people that have become Formula One fans from Netflix.
Yeah. I think it's a step in the wrong direction. I think one of the goals of Liberty Media taking over was just trying to get the more average fan to get to the track. And especially with some of these venues where you can fit 100,000 people, 150,000 people on race day, you're not going to need, I mean, I know Formula One's expensive, but you're looking at a new race. You're going to need 3 years anyways to get your money back. So you don't need to do it all in the first year. And I think this is a step in the wrong direction to have the tickets this expensive. And on top of that, I am on Google Maps right now, or whatever, Apple Maps. And as the road goes, Hard Rock Stadium is 8.2 miles away from the beach. So I'm really confused as to what the beach seating is. There's a thing called Snake Creek Canal behind the stadium. There's a couple of small bodies of water near the stadium, but the actual beach is not close to the stadium. So I'm really curious as to what that entails. Maybe it's just a name for it, just a nickname for that area of seating. I don't know. I'm not an expert. Maybe you should just stop trying to use logic.
Yeah. But yeah, it's rough, but I'll let you continue on with whatever you got left.
That was it for me.
Okay.
Did we have Mexico is November 7th.
Yeah. No racing this weekend.
No.
Anywhere. So listen to all of our old episodes and maybe you'll win a prize. If you can find the oldest episode that's publicly available and listen to it, I'll give away a prize. I don't know what the prize is, but I'll find something this weekend when I'm in Indianapolis. How about that?
Sounds good. And we do have an interview with Frenchie that's going up on our YouTube channel, and the audio will be sent out as well on the podcast of books he's recommending for the holiday season.
Oh,
this includes Formula One and IndyCar books. So Formula One fans will definitely want to tune in. He has a couple he liked, one or two that maybe weren't his favorite, and then his top four like all-time favorite books he's read. And he's read
a lot.
Probably, I want to say maybe hundreds. I think it's hundreds of racing books.
Does he have
and autobiographies.
Leather-bound books in a mahogany bookcase?
No.
Okay.
But that would be cool.
Yes, it would.
But he has like four tall shelves full of books. So that should be coming out probably closer to like Thanksgiving-ish. So 2-3 weeks away here. But we'll get that out there so you guys can listen to that as like bonus content and check it out on our YouTube channel. If you want to see our ugly faces. Well, sorry, one ugly face and a French-looking guy.
I love it. Yeah, I can't wait to listen. I've talked to Frenchie often about those books, and I keep saying I'm going to get around to reading one, and then I never get around to it because, well, it's been a fun year, so...
Well, I got to run this by you, give you a chance to scold me. I openly admitted to him in the episode that I have only read three books since eighth grade. And
didn't you have to read in like high school and college, or did you just like do the Cliff Notes crap?
Yeah, Cliff Notes.
I mean, so did I. So, I have no room to talk on this one. I can't scold you. I have no room to talk.
Well, so obviously when you say something like that, like I've read three books since eighth grade, it's like, haha, he's probably exaggerating. It's probably more like 10, 12. Something. Like, no, it is quite literal. And I couldn't even think of the third book. I did think of the third book. So I've read, since eighth grade, I've read Angela's Ashes, The Election of 18, I already forgot the name. I think it's The Election of 1812.
Wow.
It's one about John Quincy Adams versus Andrew Jackson. It's called The Election of Insert Year, The Birth of Modern Politics. And then The Beast by Jade Gers.
Great book.
Yes. Those are the three books I've read. I don't know. I suck with reading comprehension when it comes to like an author trying to paint a picture through words, and you're supposed to imagine the scene in your head and like what plot twists are coming. Like when they just like, you know, say like major plot twist, I'll just read right past it. And then like two pages later, the person's dead. And I'm like, what? Wait, hang on a second. I obviously missed something here. And I just get like so frustrated. I just basically gave up.
Yeah. I'm pretty much with you on that. I mean, I did also read a great book called Black Noon about the 1964 Indy 500, which is definitely a must read. But I mean, my book reading is pretty much racing books here and there, or I also really like reading music biographies, you know, Jimi Hendrix, Nirvana, etc. I've gotten through in the last couple of years, but now that I'm on the road so much, I usually fall asleep when I'm on an airplane or whatever and don't read. So I don't get as much done as I have in a while, but yeah, I'm excited to check it out, and maybe I'll at least try to buy one for myself for Christmas this year.
Maybe. I'm kind of interested. Well, my dad has that split book by Voynovich. I might try to get that. Sorry, I misspoke. It's The Election of 1828. I knew 1812 sounded wrong. Election of 1828, Birth of Modern Politics. Well, it's basically how Quincy Adams and Jackson like got so low to like insult each other's wives on the campaign trail, which is like unheard of at the time. Wow. So.
And now we're here. Well, that's the end of our political discussion. Before we ended off the internet. Guys, thank you for listening. We'll be back next week to preview Mexico and talk about whatever else is going on in the Formula One world. So please have a lovely weekend of racing.
Have you ever wanted to know how to win a Formula One Grand Prix? I mean, really know. Know about the driver tactics from the cockpit, the strategy calls from the pit wall, and even the mind games in the paddock. There's a lot more that goes into winning a Grand Prix than just 90 minutes of racing. So every week on the F1 Strategy Report, we're taking a deep dive into the decisions that shape every result. Hey there, my name is Michael Laminato, and every week I'm joined by an expert guest from the paddock to talk through the big calls that won the race and the missteps that resulted in bitter defeat. Before every race, we'll look back at the previous year's result and consult the current form guide, and we'll be in your feed after every Grand Prix dissecting the outcome and what it means for the championship. So for your regular hit of Formula One analysis, subscribe to the F1 Strategy Report wherever you get your favourite podcasts. The Strategy Report is a Beer Mogul podcast on the Evergreen Podcasts Network. My name's Michael Laminato, and I'll catch you after the checkered flag.